The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Joe Polizzi, author of Content Inc., and you're listening to my very favorite marketing book podcast, The Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to The Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which has been named by Forbes and LinkedIn, amongst others, as one of the top marketing podcasts. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since I get to read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection in with a message that you're a listener, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. All right, let's get on with the show. Today I'm joined by Joe Polizzi, and we're going to talk about his new book, Content Inc., How Entrepreneurs Use Content to Build Massive Audiences and Create Radically Successful Businesses. Joe Polizzi is the godfather of content marketing. He's the founder of Content Marketing Institute, which is the leading education and training organization for content marketing, including the largest in-person content marketing event on the globe called Content Marketing World. Joe has authored or co-authored three other books: Get Content, Get Customers, Managing Content Marketing, and more recently, Epic Content Marketing, which was named one of five must-read business books by Fortune magazine. You can also hear Joe on his podcast, This Old Marketing, with his co-host, Robert Rose, which, by the way, I have listened to every one of the nearly 100 episodes, stalker. So Joe also hosts his own podcast called Content Inc., a twice-a-week short-form podcast designed to teach one key content marketing lesson in each episode. If you ever see Joe in person, he'll be wearing orange, and he is a diehard Cleveland sports fan. Joe, congratulations on Content Inc. and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
I didn't know if I did a good enough job last episode with you. So just being back on your show means something. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor to have you back. And I'm such a fan, and the book was fantastic. But speaking of Cleveland sports fans, the book, Content Inc., the foreword is by Brian Clark of Copyblogger. And he is a graduate of Texas A&M, and your quarterback, one of your quarterbacks for the Browns, Johnny Manziel, he's a graduate of Texas A&M.
Wow, so you're doing the Kevin Bacon 6 degrees thing.
So that's that if I had to guess, if things go well for the Browns this season with Johnny Manziel, you're going to be hearing Brian Clark say the following to you: "You're welcome."
You know what? Everyone here in Cleveland wants that to happen. We just don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. Well, this is the sad. He obviously wasn't ready for a variety of reasons last year, but I have to say, we were in the playoff hunt, and it was Johnny's first game starting. I was at that game against Cincinnati, and I honestly have never. By the way, I've been a Browns fan forever. I've seen them play a lot of horrible games. That was the worst game I've ever seen them play.
Ooh.
And it was, and then everybody was like, I had Johnny football fever. And then all of a sudden it just came crashing down reality. But like, oh no, again, we drafted the wrong quarterback. Now he looks better here. So we'll see. I think he needs a little bit more seasoning yet. 2016 may be the year. Maybe he'll grow 3 or 4 more inches. I think that'll really be right. Helpful.
Yeah,
so you can see over the line would be great.
Yeah. Plan on that, Joe. And is one of the things about content marketing. It takes time. So I think it also,
we need these things take time. Patience.
So this book is very different from Epic Content Marketing.
It is.
So explain who this book is for.
It's so funny, as you were doing the introduction, I need to work on my titles because everything has content in it. I guess that's either good or bad. All four of the books I've written or co-written. This one is targeted to mostly entrepreneurs, startups, super small businesses. And all the other three books that I've written have all been targeted to enterprise marketers in some way, larger companies, more complex content marketing challenges. And to be honest with you, this was a very selfish undertaking that I had because I wanted every, as you know, and because you were at a speech that I gave where I talked about, I have a goal of writing a book every 2 years. And so I got done with Epic Content Marketing in 2013. I'm like, okay, got it. What's the next book? And I wanted to write one on Content Marketing Institute. I wanted to write about, we had very little money, very little resources, didn't have any people. It was just me. You know, how do we build an audience and how do we actually build an audience and then sell products and services on the back of that audience? I said, hey, this is it. We should write it about CMI. And then I'm like, in good content marketing fashion, I'm like, nobody cares about me. You know, nobody cares about CMI. They care about themselves. How can I take this into a broader teaching and make it more helpful than so it's just not all the Joe show all the time here. Mm-hmm. So then I went out and started to say, who else is doing this? Who else did this? And of course, you mentioned Brian Clark from Copyblogger. He's, you know, wrote the foreword and an example throughout the book. Mm-hmm. Found Rand Fishkin from Moz. Found Ann Reardon in Sydney. Found Matthew Patrick, who runs Game Theory. And over dozens and dozens and dozens of other examples. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's something here. This is actually a thing. People are doing this. And as I went through the different cases, I realized, hey, you can reverse engineer this in every one, the six steps of the book, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. Every one of these companies did the same thing. The timetables were a little bit different, but they followed the same strategy. So that's why I get a little bit excited over this, because I really think this is a better way to launch a business. If you are an entrepreneur and you're trying to launch a business, I think this is better to go out and build an audience and then monetize that audience rather than thinking, naively so in most cases, that we have an amazing product or service that's just going to sell like crazy, which we know from research is simply not going to happen.
Yeah, there were so many examples in the book that if you had to, for some strange reason, you could have stripped out all the information about Content Marketing Institute and it would have been just as clear, but it was interesting to hear about how you all had done it. In the book, you said entrepreneurs are getting bad advice. What do you mean by that?
I'll tell you a story because I just think it's more interesting. So this is about 2 months ago and I'm on a panel with a bunch of venture capitalists and angel investors. And we're talking to a group of entrepreneurs and they're just talking about, you know, how you go in and get your Series A funding and your seed capital and how it works. And you got a product or service and blah, 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 all the same stuff. And they get to me, I'm the content guy in the middle. And they're going about, here's how you do it. And here's how you need funding and all this stuff. And I basically said, I think you're all doing it wrong. I said, I think it's, if you look at the success rates of most businesses and just take the ones we talk about in the book, right? Small Business Administration says after 5 years, more than 50% of businesses die, don't survive. After 10 years, it's about 30% or less. If you look at Y Combinator, which is maybe the most successful accelerator on the planet, they have a 10% success rate. I mean, come on, 10%? These are the cream of the crop and we've got a 10% success rate? Something is not right. I think we really believe that the best way to build a business is just to have this amazing idea for a product and service and then go out traditionally and try to sell that product using whatever, you know, focusing totally on the product and not on the needs of the audience. And I think we need to flip that model. I think if we first focus on, regardless if you have a product or service in mind, you probably do. But what if you go
let's
out?
Let's hope so.
Yeah, let's hope. But it actually doesn't matter in this model. If you had a focus, a passion in a certain area, and you wanted to target a specific audience, what if you just became a servant to that audience? What if you just distributed ongoing, relevant, amazing, remarkable information to that audience, built that audience over time, like Brian Clark did, who blogged for 19 months in a row without monetizing that at all, built hundreds of thousands of subscribers off of that. And Brian sold, what, 8, 9 different products throughout that? Now he's got Rainmaker, which seems to be his his best selling product. And now he's a $10 million plus company, but he sold many, many products over the years, but he didn't have a product to sell at first. All he was selling was free information. So I think that's a better way to go to market today, because there are no barriers to entry when it comes to publishing. You can find your audiences out there if you do the right things that we talk about in the book. And then you'll know and understand that audience better than anyone else because you've been serving that audience for a period of time. You'll know inherently what products and services they're going to want to buy. And that's exactly all the case studies in the book. That's what we found.
So the Content Inc. model, you have six parts, and this is the main thing we wanted to talk about, because the way you've reverse engineered it and then broken it down into just six steps was really interesting. But I still think that when you're explaining this or you're talking to people, just like when you were on that panel with the VCs, they must look at you like you've got two heads.
That's exactly. They like, absolutely do.
Like you're explaining for the first time that the earth rotates around the sun instead of the sun rotating around the earth, or that the world is actually spherical. It's not flat. So let's go with the first one, the sweet spot. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the first two steps are all about building your strategy. So the first one we start with is the sweet spot. So for an entrepreneur, small business, we're looking at where do we have our passion? Passion is really important. Jay, but we talk about passion a lot in the book, and Jay Baer's got some amazing takes on it. There's actually some research behind this as well, because if you don't have personal passion over an issue that you're going to create content around or build your content niche, you're not going to get up every day and do the work. That's why so many content marketing programs fall flat, because you just don't have the passion to get up, motivate yourself, and do the work. And you have to do the work at some point. So it's the intersection between something you're very passionate about. But so if you're in an existing business, that could also be passionate over a very significant customer pain point that you're targeting, audience pain point. And then that intersects with somewhere that you have a knowledge or skill area around, some authority area. So that you have to figure out, where can you actually be the leading expert in the world? What is that? So the intersection of this passion and this authority area, that's your sweet spot. And that's where we pull our content tilt that goes into the next step. But you have to start somewhere. And that's actually how most content marketing programs are run. And they figure, oh, there's my sweet spot. And then they run with that, unfortunately.
Whether they're passionate or not.
Well, the issue, who knows? Well, you and I both know most content marketing programs out there have no strategy. It's just, they're just creating lots of content that they think will work and think will drive more products and services. But as we know right now, the majority of content marketing programs are failing because they have no documented content marketing strategy as we know it.
That's, yeah, the military has a term for it. It's called ready, fire, aim.
Yes, who does this? But I think has happened is because there are no barriers to publishing today, we just start publishing. Hey, and I, by the way, I have nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with experimentation. At some point, you're going to have to do the work to become best of breed in your industry. But I think you at least have to take a cocktail napkin and like scratch out something and say, here's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And answer the question why you're going to do it in the first
place.
That's
my favorite way to plan content.
it's as it should be.
Content with cocktail napkins.
Well, that's what because somebody will ask me, because I always do the stat, like the majority of companies don't have any kind of documented content marketing strategy. And then somebody will ask me, well, how do I create that? And then I basically talk about this content marketing mission statement. And I say, take a cocktail napkin. Scratch it out. Start somewhere. And actually, the idea of actually doing it pen to paper is really critical. And I love the research that's coming out about that, about it actually writing things down leads to greater learning. And that's a whole different podcast.
And a lot of great things started in bars, too. So it's all kind of working
I think most amazing inventions have started in a saloon of some kind.
Right. So the sweet spot, like can you give the chicken example?
Oh, one of my favorite examples is Andy Schneider, the chicken whisperer. I've learned that from my good friend Andrew Davis, author of Brandscaping. And he turned me on to Andy Schneider. So Andy Schneider is the chicken whisperer. And the whole idea was Andy wanted to raise chickens in his backyard and went out and searching for information as a hobby, and couldn't find any information at all, and just started to do research and started to get more and more information. And he actually became the leading expert in the world on this because he had a passion around teaching. So his passion was he absolutely loved teaching. He loved to share this idea as his friends came up to him and asked him, and they were getting interested in raising chickens. And I didn't even know this was a thing, by the way, but they were getting interested in raising chickens in their backyard. And Andy was like, I really want to teach my friends about this, started teaching them. And at the same time, he became the authority in backyard poultry. So that passion for teaching and the idea of raising chickens in your backyard poultry was his knowledge area of expertise where he had authority in, and that created the brand as we know it, the Chicken Whisperer. And it's just if Andy didn't have a passion for teaching, he would have never done this because he wouldn't have cared enough to actually put the meetup groups together. He put meetup groups together, then started a radio show. The radio show now gets 20,000 weekly listeners. You know, then launched a book around it, launched a magazine, and now is the undisputed heavyweight champion of backyard poultry, if there is such a thing. He's been able to build a fairly successful business off the back of that.
There are riches in niches. Let's go to the second one, the content tilt. Now, this one was, I thought, I'm just guessing, but is this the one that's the most difficult for people to grasp or understand?
This is the most difficult and the most important.
Okay.
I think this is where most startups, small businesses, even large enterprises stop at the sweet spot. They're like, great, there's a customer pain point. Or here's something our company is passionate about. Here's where we have authority. Go. But the problem is you haven't identified an area that you can actually be the leading expert in the world at. Like, for example, type in SEO ebook into Google. How many results you're going to get? 11 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. Every agency on the planet does an SEO ebook. They're not differentiating at all. You're telling the same story as everyone else. You'll never be able to cut through the clutter. The content tilt is where we really start to define and actually answer the question, where can we actually be the leading expert in the world in a particular content niche? And I believe that has to happen. Like, you actually have to find an area of little to no competition, especially if you're a startup, and dominate that area of some kind and focus on that. So, I mean, in the book, we talk about the example of Ann Reardon. So Ann Reardon, now known as the baking queen of Sydney, Australia, mm-hmm. she's a stay-at-home mom at the time, and she's up late for nightly feedings with her young child and is bored and wants to do something. And so she's an educator. She actually educated youth in the Western part of Sydney. And at the same time, she's a qualified food scientist. She's a dietitian. So she's got that as her sweet spot. But that, again, that's not enough because you and I both know, I mean, I don't do a lot of baking. I don't know if you do, Douglas, but
I like to eat the stuff that's baked.
Yeah, see, you and I are in the
same
boat.
So I participate in that way.
There are tens of thousands of baking blogs out there. So let's just say, and Anne wanted to start a baking blog. Well, how is Anne going to cut through the clutter? Mm-hmm. Impossible. Not going to happen. Maybe if you have a multi-million dollar budget, maybe you could do that.
Or backing from Kraft Foods or something like
that. Exactly. You're not going to do that. I always say, like, I always use the example of I talked to an owner of a pet supply store that wanted to start a pet supplies blog. I said, good luck with that. I mean, you're going up against Petco and PetSmart, who are already spending billions of dollars in marketing and advertising. There's no way you're going to cut through that clutter. They're going to crush you. I mean, what's going to take somebody to move from the pet supplies blog or the baking blog that they're currently engaged in and go over to yours? Nothing, if you're just talking about the same old things. So what Anne did is she identified a content tilt where she could actually be differentiated and tell a different story. So she targeted simply impossible food creations. So she looked at things like, how do I take 5 pounds of Snickers bars and make a cake out of it? Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if you saw the Instagram cake example, but that's one that went viral where it looks like a regular chocolate cake on the outside, but if you slice into it, it's a perfect replica of the Instagram logo, and it just went crazy online. Mm-hmm. But those, every week, she does a video embedded into her blog on that particular type of thing, impossible food creations. She had 100 subscribers on YouTube in, I think, January of 2012, and now she's got almost 2 million.
Yeah, it was 10,000 after 1 year or something
exactly.
Like that.
I mean, it's just, you know, you do the work and you start gradually growing and you build that base. And then as you're doing that, you know, you get more and more people that are getting interested in you because you have this differentiated message. You're talking about things that are really interesting and different to a particular set of audience. And then the good things happen. That's obviously the going ahead to the other four steps. But the content tilt is so critical. And that's where you have to stop and you have to do things like, you know, what's my content marketing mission statement? What is that audience need that really can position us as best of breed, as differentiated, as the leading expert in the world? And nobody does that.
Take a step back and tell the listener about what the pet people ended up doing.
Oh, so the pet star example. So I'm just, and by the way, I was not hired on the account. This is just, I'm just doing some free consulting, talking to this pet supplies owner. And I said, look, you can go ahead and do the pet supplies blog, but you're not going to be successful. I'm sorry to be a downer, Debbie Downer here, but it's not going to happen. So we started to look at, they started telling me about some of the different customer bases they have and some of the different specialty items. And we started to get into the conversation that a lot of pet owners like to travel with their pets. So that was interesting. And what we also find out is that there's a lot of pet owners like to travel with their pets, specifically dogs in this case, in recreational vehicles. I said, wow, now we've got something. Mm-hmm. So we started to sketch out, well, what if you created an informational resource specifically for pet owners in a certain area, let's say Northeast Ohio, that like to travel with their dogs in RVs? Wouldn't that be? And they're like, no, that's too niche. I said, no, that could be it. That could be perfect, because you know what? You could be the leading resource over that area. And they're like, well, what if that's too small? It's like, well, you have to dominate one area first. Just like Huffington Post didn't just launch 250 different blogs at one time like they have now. They started with one. They became the expert in one. You know what? Then they were successful there, and they launched number two and mm-hmm. number three. And I think that's the way that we have to do it. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, Douglas, but there's a magazine called RVs and Dogs. I don't know if you – do you subscribe to that mag? I don't know if you do.
I go online for it.
But that's the kind of thing that people can't believe. That's how specific and niche we need to get. And we so look at total addressable market and we've got to reach more. No, we don't. We just have to reach the right audience. And sometimes that audience could be 10 people, could be 200 people, 10,000 people. In, you know, Matthew Patrick's case at Game Theory, he now reaches 5 million people. So it really depends. But I love those examples of going niche, and I think that's where the opportunity is.
But I think it's the problem is that it's like saying to a right-handed batter, okay, now I just want you to try batting with your left hand. Just it just seems so unnatural to them. But then they get it, you know, they taste the wine, and they want more and more. So let's go to the other parts, because you're starting to touch on some of those, particularly in the diversification. The third one is building the base.
Yeah, there are other ones, and I'll do the next three in a bunch, because they all go together. Because now you've defined the strategy, you've got the content tilt, you've got your area of differentiation. Now you've got to do the work. And step three is building the base. And a really complicated model here, Douglas. So, you know, hang with me if you can.
Speak slowly.
Yeah. Except for the listeners, so the listeners can understand this.
Really, my listeners are pretty smart. It's me that
one content type. So is it textual? Is it audio or video? One main platform. Is it website, your blog, iTunes, YouTube? Consistent delivery of valuable content over time. That's everyone. That's every case we looked at. So what happens with most companies is they're just distributing content everywhere. Mm-hmm. Oh, we got to be on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, God forbid Google+, and whatever else they're doing. And they don't realize that the greatest media companies of all time have done that strategy. One content type for the most part, mm-hmm. one content platform, consistent delivery over time. This is where the work gets done. And I think it's because we've complicated it so much by publishing everywhere. We haven't focused on what really works in media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's examples of that, like ESPN started out as a cable channel.
They did that for 20. I mean, now you look at ESPN, right? ESPN has Well, then we're getting into diversification a little bit, but they just started. They just did the work. They were just cable. If you look at the TED Talks, were just these in-person events. Now they do lots of other stuff. If you look at the Huffington Post, was just one blog. New York Times, Washington Post was just a magazine. Now we tend to think that, oh, well, that's because they only had that choice. But that's the same goes true for all the new launches that we talk about. We talk about Game Theory, the video series from Matthew Patrick. He launches videos on YouTube. If we look at Darren Rouse in Digital Photography School, he basically launches textual how-to content on a blog over time, and that's how he's consistently done it. So all the other case studies, whether we look at Goop from Gwyneth Paltrow or Glossier or Eventube or all the other ones we talk about in the book, the same thing. They do this formula, and it works really, really well. And that's not what most companies do. We're just almost like spray and pray over every platform. And it's not that we don't use the other platforms, but we focus on becoming great and becoming a master of one content type in one specific platform.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me of a fire hose that's out of control. Exactly. As opposed to a fireman holding it in one place. So.
Well, you know what? Actually, think about that. This is, I've never used this example before, but I was just at Cedar Point Amusement Park in Sandusky, Ohio with the kids. And you know the games you go up and you squirt water into the mouth of the clown and the balloon blows up and pops? You know that game?
Yeah.
Think of it this way. If you have a very targeted stream and you're going right into that and you're going to blow the balloon up, you're going to be much more successful than if you're just spreading water everywhere. You're never going to blow that balloon up. It's the same thing. Just be targeted, be focused, be great at one thing over time. And I guess here's the caveat.
One balloon at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. But here's the issue, and some people don't like to hear this, but this takes time. In almost all cases we looked at in the book, all these case studies, these great successful businesses, it took over 12 months. It takes time to build a loyal audience. And I always get the backlash of, well, we want something that works faster. And what I'm like, well, actually, 12 months, when you think about it, is not that long if you want to think about building a loyal audience that you can actually monetize. But I'm like, well, what else are you going to do? You're going to buy advertising? What kind of, are you just looking for quick hits, sales? What I want to
do. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, exactly. I want to build. And here's what's amazing is that these businesses that build these loyal audience over time, they grow much faster. They're much more successful down 2, 3, 4 years from now because they have a prospective customer base that's already built. They don't have to go out and find the customers. They already have them. They just sell whatever they want to those customers that know, like, and trust them already.
Well, now you're getting into facts, though. And that's going to – no, no, no. You know, I think it's like this diet pill mentality. It's like these companies, it's like a kind of a person that says, oh, wait, I just want to take a diet pill and lose 100 pounds. I don't actually want to do the work to make that happen. It's like they want to write a check and just have this this all occur overnight. Or it's somebody who says, I want to go in the forestry business. I want to, you know, like sell lumber and have it harvested, but they want it tomorrow.
I think the other issue is the fact that when you stop focusing on what you want to sell and you keep all your focus on the needs of an audience base, amazing things happen. And that's what we see in the book. That's what we see with these case studies. And then you spend all this time focusing on a product that in most cases, and what we see from the research, doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You spend years and years on focusing on a product that ultimately either nobody wants to buy or you just can't market it effectively because you've been spending all the time on the product and not enough time on the audience.
Yeah, there's so many examples of companies that are really successful and they will tell you, well, we didn't actually start out doing this. We kind of stumbled on
always
this.
Pivoted. Right. Yeah, always pivoted. Well, you know what's interesting too, if you look at a company like people always come back at me with this model and say, but look at how fast BuzzFeed became successful. Do you know BuzzFeed started in 2006? Like, when did you start hearing about BuzzFeed? 2010, 11? It did a lot of work for a lot of years to get to that point where now everybody, but they did and by the way, they followed the same model too. Mm-hmm. So
it reminds me of what Chris Brogan talks about. It only took him 10 years to be an overnight success or something like that.
It's so true. Yeah. Anyways, I know we want to go through I'll go through the other three.
Yeah. The other three are harvesting audience, diversification, and monetization. Yep.
So you build the base, you put in the work, like we just said, then at while you're doing this, you're harvesting an audience. You want to make sure that you build, I mean, that's your key. You're trying to build a prospective customer database for down the road. So you're going to build this audience focusing on, for the most part, email subscribers. And most people are like, well, email? Email is dead. No. Email is more powerful than ever right now. And what we see, even with the YouTubers of the world or the greatest podcasters, you will see that all their calls to action are going to their website, their own properties. They're leveraging social media channels, but they're going to their own properties where they can actually have a direct relationship via email communication. So that's really critical. That's throughout all the BuzzFeed does the same thing. New York Times does the same thing. So it's interesting to see even all these social media companies, they're focusing on building an audience through email that you have actually have some control over. And as we know, Facebook companies like that will make a decision tomorrow that you go, I know you have fans and connections, but no, today you can't talk to them. That's exactly what's going to happen. That's what happened already with Facebook. And then you go into diversification, step five. Once you build this audience and you've mastered this one channel, now you're diversifying. So if you look at really successful example like Joy Cho, who we actually have a whole chapter dedicated to her. Mm-hmm. She's one of the most amazing, fastest growing companies around design that's out there. She got deals with Microsoft, Target, and all kinds of things. She started with a blog in 2005. Then she started launching books in 2010. And then in 2011, she went on Instagram and social media. Now she's got over 13 million people following her on Instagram. She's a worldwide sensation, but she did 5 years of building that base. And then she built an email audience over that time and then diversified into books and into social media. We see the same thing back to our friend, the Chicken Whisperer. You know, started out with the meetups, built the base off of the radio show, and then went and did, hey, we're going to do the Chicken Whisperer magazine, and we're going to do the Chicken Whisperer book series. So it's interesting how that diversification happens. And that, by the way, ESPN, the same thing. Look at the media company example. We talked about them doing cable for 20, 30 years. Now you got ESPN, the magazine. You got the ESPY Awards. You've got ESPN. The website that's amazing. You got fantasy football, you know, you got all kinds of stuff that they do, but they focused it initially on becoming great at that cable channel platform. And then the last thing is monetization. And the one thing that I'll say, because you're going to monetize, basically you have the audience intact, you have the loyalty, they know, like, and trust you, and then you're going to start to sell something. We had talked about 9 different ways that you can make money off of that. And the one thing I'll say, Douglas, is a lot of people say, hey, why are we waiting till the end? Now look, every smart marketer.
It's like they didn't read the book. They went straight to chapter 6.
Exactly. It's like, hey, I just want to make money. Now here's the thing. All of the examples are trying to make money wherever they can. You don't just say, okay, well, now I've diversified. Now I'm going to see how I'm going to make money. No, you're all the time looking at ways that you can monetize the platform. The problem is, you have to get to some level of a loyal audience, what actually Brian Clark calls a minimum viable audience, before you can actually monetize it. You know, our friend Michael Stelzner from Social Media Examiner, he said his number was 10,000. He didn't monetize anything from the Social Media Examiner platform until he got to 10,000 email subscribers. And once he got to 10,000, he started to monetize. So everyone has to kind of figure out what that number is, but all along the way, we're trying to monetize, whether that's I'm going to do events like we do at Content Marketing Institute, whether you're going to do advertising or merchandising like Game Theory does, whether you're going to sell products and services like Moz does, like Copyblogger does. There's lots of different ways to do it. Philanthropy, donations are another great way to look at it. So you just have to figure out what's going to make sense. And even all along, maybe you had that product or service in mind, and maybe you pivoted along the way, but you didn't even launch it yet, but you focused on building that audience who's ready to buy because they already love you and they already trust you, and they're going to buy really whatever you want to sell them whenever you're ready.
And it also seemed like several of them had ways that they were monetizing that they didn't even occur to them at the beginning, but somebody came forward and asked them for something and they realized, oh, yeah, sure, okay, yeah, I can add that revenue stream as well.
Oh, I'll tell you firsthand that happened with us, because as you know from the book, I mean, we started with a content marketing matching service. That was the product that was online. We were like the eHarmony for content marketing, which I still think is funny today. That's how I always explained it to people. But that that didn't work. The financial model didn't work at all. But all the same time, I wasn't listening as closely to our audience, and the audience was asking for education and training. Mm-hmm. That's all they were asking for. And then finally it dawned on me where I'm like, you know, maybe the product that I'm trying to sell that's really only relevant to about 1% of our audience, 99% of our audience wants education and training. And as soon as I started listening to that and actually being open to that possibility, that's when the business model took off.
Quickly, too, as I recall.
Absolutely. So we launched Content Marketing Institute. So I started building the audience in 2007 around content marketing and enterprise marketers. In 2010, May of 2010, we launched Content Marketing Institute. Immediately, it took off. We decided, hey, we're going to launch the number one platform for this digitally. We're going to launch the number one magazine, because we'd already built the base by then, already had the blog going. Mm-hmm. So 3 years doing the blog, launched the magazine, the in-person event, and the website. And immediately monetized the website with our benefactor program, which I detail in the book quite extensively. Generated revenue that helped us to fund the event and the magazine. And then, you know, we were hoping for 100 people to come to the first event. We got 660 to show up. You know, this year we'll see over 3,000. It's our main moneymaker, mm-hmm. and it's been pretty darn successful. So
it seems like with you, your organization, and Social Media Examiner, and so many others, there's a sort of a, hey, I think we've got something here, flexion point. And that was yours when it was like, oh, well, all
right. I'm like, oh my, yeah, exactly. Well, it finally started to listen to the audience. And you know, you get that, you start getting, when you serve an audience, you start getting people that just email you or tweet you or send you messages and say, oh my God, thank you so much. Can you do more on this? I really need this template, this guide, this right. whatever.
Well, it's like the audience for your podcast where I'm doing it. I'll see something and it's like, oh, I want to hear the guys talk about this. And so you said that most of your show prep now is coming from your audience.
It's really crazy. We never expected that. Where, you know, we were thinking, well, you know, we're going to have to take time and find the best stories, and we just get them sent to us.
You're having
now.
To rule out
Don't have
what
to,
you're not yeah, going
to exactly.
talk about
it's
now.
It's so amazing. This stuff shouldn't happen, but it happens when you build a loyal audience. And we've got people that, of course, right after the episode goes live, they tweet us. They like this. They don't like that. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fix it. I get that all the time. Hey, you did this wrong spelling mistake in the show notes. And sorry, that's right. on me. You know, that kind of stuff.
But that tells you they're engaged. I'll take it.
Oh, you got it. It's unbelievable. But again, so we didn't launch the podcast until, you know, whatever. It's been almost 2 years now, but we had already built the base of the blog. So if you think about, if you're listening to this, don't think, oh, I'm going to launch a blog and a digital magazine and a podcast and a video series. No. Let's figure out and focus on be great at one. Do one really well. Build your audience of email subscribers and then diversify with things like a podcast, a video series, a magazine, a book, whatever yeah. comes to mind.
Joe, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
It depends on who's reading it. So let's say that you're an entrepreneur and startup. Mm-hmm. I would say this, I really do believe this too, and whether I've just been talking to myself too much or what, but I really do believe this is the business model of the future. Like, I believe this is the way to go to market. Don't waste unnecessary time and energy focusing on how to make your product great until you get a loyal audience and they will tell you what products they want. So that's the first one. The second one is if you're an enterprise marketer, if you're a marketer in a larger company, this could be the change you need to make happen so that you can build a loyal audience in a particular content niche that can help you, let's say, close sales faster, sell more at time of sale, keep customers longer, retention, loyalty, whatever the case is. So I think that this can work for larger enterprise marketers, but I really did honestly write the book for small businesses, startups, and entrepreneurs to say, look, here it is. Here's your go-to-business strategy right here. Do this and come back in 15 to 17 months, and I think you'll have something pretty special. Mm-hmm. Let's hope.
Yeah. So, Joe, let me ask you one other question. I know you've written the book. You don't have time for anything because you've written these books.
I'll have time to be on your podcast every time.
Thank you. Oh, my, I really appreciate it. Let me ask you one question. I often ask, what books have you read lately? But I'm not even going to ask you because you've been so busy writing yours. Are there any books on your upcoming reading list you're looking forward to getting into?
Actually, I just got a first copy. Well, it's a digital copy of Town Inc. from Andrew Davis. And I'm super excited to read this book. And I've told him, and I basically reached out to him and I said, look, dude, I know the book's not completely done yet, not to the printer, but can I have a copy? Because I really want to read it. It's the whole idea of how do you take your region, your town, your city to the next level by focusing on, I think, very similar practices of content marketing, but he's doing it from a very specific regional economic development standpoint. So I'm super excited about getting that.
Oh, great. Yeah, me too. I have a client that's an economic development entity, so that sounds perfect. How can listeners find out more about you and this new book?
So, yeah, anything about the book and where to buy it and all that good stuff is content-inc.com. There is a free ebook and a free chapter. I think it's the introduction we have out there that'll give you a really good overview. So if you're really cheap and you don't want to buy the book, you can just download all the free stuff. And you can get most of the information, as you know, off of the Content Inc. podcast. You can get information at content-inc.com as well. I'm at Joe Polizzi on Twitter. And if you reach out to me, I will promise you that in 24 hours, I will try to get back to you, especially if you make it a very personal note of some kind. Twitter's kind of my main communication area. And that's it. And I'm just hoping this is a new audience for me, Douglas. So, I mean, I've targeted these large enterprise marketers, and I really feel like this could be something special. And, you know, I hope it is. I hope it really makes an impact on a lot of companies and individuals.
Well, oddly enough, I spoke with Robert Rose when he was interviewed on the show, and we, of course, spent most of the episode talking about you. But we were talking about this book, and we were discussing about how this is actually a book for a much larger audience than what some of your other books have been. In other words, the enterprise, more the enterprise-oriented for the others, but this one is an enormous swath of the business world.
This is going to be interesting. It's funny. So I've worked with McGraw-Hill as publisher of my last two books, and they published Get Content, Get Customers as well. But last with Epic, there was not, I mean, I don't want to say that they put it to the side, but it's just a smaller audience. You're talking about marketers in an enterprise, big audience, by the way, but not as big as small businesses and small business owners, small business marketers, entrepreneurs, startups. And I think they're very excited about it. They told me, I don't even know if this is true, but I'm going to tell you because I'm going to take it to heart that they're telling me the truth. This is their number one book they're focusing on for 16. So hopefully, and it's already really doing well. Amazon just bought a ton of copies. So they're preparing they've ordered a ton of copies. So I'm hopeful it's a new audience and I'm super passionate about it. And not that I don't like talking about Epic content marketing and talking to enterprises. I absolutely do. But I love talking to startups and entrepreneurs because you can affect change much faster because they can make the decision tomorrow to do this.
Well, and they don't have a billion-dollar budget either. So they actually have to be smarter than they are rich.
Absolutely true. And the passion is usually already there. Yes. You talk to a lot of enterprise marketers and the passion has been sucked out of them years ago.
It's surgically removed. It's part of the their corporate health care.
Yeah, I think you get
plan.
That's part of the 10-year anniversary at an enterprise.
Right.
Just
right.
To surgically get it removed.
But yeah. Yeah. So the name of the book is Content Inc., How Entrepreneurs Use Content to Build Massive Audiences and Create Radically Successful Businesses. The author is Joe Polizzi. Joe, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, thank you so much for all your support. I cannot thank you enough and looking forward to seeing you soon.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who've left an iTunes review, please let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And remember the words of the entrepreneur, author, and motivational speaker Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune."